outside the box of religious obligation lies a road less travelled, into the heart of the Father's affection. Slinging freedom all over the place, this is the God Journey.
Well, happy Easter, Kyle.
Happy Easter, Wayne.
Can you believe the weekend is rolling up on us already?
I cannot, honestly. It is... I'm in the part of my semester where it moves from the end of December through like the first part of March. It's kind of that slog time where the weather typically isn't the greatest and students have fairly low motivation. The excitement of the start of the freshman year is over and now they're just in classes. And but now, right after spring break, then you usually only have like 5 or 6 weeks of class left and it gets crazy. And so that is where I'm at right now. It is a blur now. Okay. I have 11 class periods left with one of my classes. And I'm like, oh my gosh, this is going to be nuts.
So should I leave you alone till May?
No,
absolutely podcasting. Not. Okay.
Nope.
We'll cram it in then, huh?
Yeah. Oh, heck no. This is an integrated part of my week.
Well, I had an imposter hunting me down last week.
Okay.
Actually, 2 weeks ago.
Imposter or paparazzi?
An imposter.
Okay.
Someone sent me the most beautiful email, and it might have been AI generated, but I tell you what, it tore into just love in a beautiful way and wanted to make it part of a larger conversation going on with people who are disaffected from religious institutions, to pastors who are just hurting because the congregation just isn't growing or experiencing the adventure of Jesus that they're hoping for, and how just love would be in that space, and listed all kinds of ways to do that. And I don't look for publicity, people, but when this letter came to me, I went, oh my gosh, this is amazing. This is exactly, if I did a publicity thing, this is what I'd want to do. So as we were drilling down into it, part of it just seemed like it was too good to be true. Like, uh-huh. But it was, they really got to the heart of the book in a beautiful way. And the way they wanted to do it was not to, which most publicists want to elevate the author to celebrity status.
Correct.
And this was about elevating the conversation about God's love and justice.
Okay.
That's what I want to do.
Yeah.
So in pursuing that, things got a little weird. There were things in the email exchange going, I'm not sure this is who I think it is. And they actually identified themselves by name, and they have a website. It's a publishing company, and she was writing me as if she were this person from this company, the CEO of it. But there are things that just didn't add up. And I said, you know, let's jump on a phone call or a Zoom chat just before we kind of move much further. Uh-huh. Oh no, I like to get working on stuff first before I have that conversation. Why don't we get going, get the money going, and we'll. Okay, so I went to the website again, and there's no phone number on the website to be able to call this publicity company and say, is so-and-so in contact with Wayne Jacobson? And I couldn't do it. I couldn't find it. So I just finally concluded, this is not real.
Uh-huh.
And so I said, you know what? Thank you, but no, we're not going down this road because you're not the person you say you are. And I forget exactly how I nailed that down, but I did nail that down into some way. The next day, I get an email from a publicity person who wants to book a guest on the God Journey. And I just tell them, yeah, I get those about 2 a month or whatever. Because I guess okay. We're on a database that says we do guest interviews. So I don't know how we got on that. But okay. I always have this little prep thing. I write back and say, the God Journey is not an interview show. It's a conversation among friends. And we do have other people on the show from time to time. But that's because yep. We know them, because their life is more important than their work and blah, blah, blah.
Yeah.
And so I wrote her back with that. And then at the end, I thought, by the way, are you taking clients to do publicity stuff? Because I would really love to do what this email offered me that turned out to be bogus, not even the person it was alleged to be. I wrote her that, just if you're taking clients, I'd love to talk to you about the possibility of doing this. Well, she wrote right back and said, I am very interested in doing this. I don't know about Just Love, but what I'm reading about it online excites me. And I sent her the first imposter email I got. I said, this is the email that turned me onto this.
Okay.
Do you think you could do this? This is what I would love someone to do. And so I've been talking to her the last few days
and
about possibly going with her, because she calls to book a guest on our show. And I said, no, but now I may end up becoming a client, which is funny. I was up the other morning. Sarah wasn't feeling well. So I went on a walk alone with Mandy, and took a four mile walk just to talk with God about this. Cause I've not wanted publicity people. I've kind of seen that as, you know, artificial and not really wanting to do it. And so I was talking to God about this. Is this the horses and chariots of Egypt? Is that what's going on here? Cause if it is, I don't want to do that.
Yep.
You elevated the shack into the discussion you wanted in the world. And you've done that with my other stuff. And I said, I somehow feel like this might be important, but I want to make sure it's not horses and chariots.
Yeah.
The next thing that popped in my mind was Baruch. And I went, what, Baruch? And then it was like in this exchange I was having with Jesus in my head, it was, one, you didn't come seeking this. This came seeking you, the first letter that turned out to be from an imposter.
Yeah.
And I'm sure it was AI generated, but it was brilliant. And then this other lady comes to you, and now you're talking to her about it. This is not something in desperation you went out to seek, which is what Israel was doing with Egypt. And I'm going, Baruch was Jeremiah's secretary, publicity person, if you would, who helped get his message out in Israel. And I'm just going, so is she Baruch to me? Is that, if you brought me someone to help this happen? And after a few miles of walking with Jesus through that, I went, you know what? I really think this is. I think this is somebody God's brought alongside to put this conversation in the fore. How does that sound to you? Like I'm being duped?
I honestly, it sounds like it's in alignment with your, with who I know you to be. And that's somebody who is a first and foremost, not looking for stardomship or celebrity status or anything along those lines. And then you're also a person who really holds it in front of God and says, okay, Lord, is this you? Is this not you? What's on your heart here? And are genuinely willing to listen for an answer instead of, no, this is the preconceived answer that I need you to confirm. And so I'm going to look for all of the different ways that I can pre-answer.
That's funny. I used to do that all the time. I came to God with a hope of what it would be. And on this one, my hope is that, this is Egypt. Don't go down there. That's what I was hoping for.
Because I know you don't want to deal with a publicist and some of the pressures and things that might come with that. And especially if the person's heart isn't in alignment with your vision and your mission for the message. Because if it's more about how do we capitalize on this and how do we generate as much wealth as conceivably possible off of this?
Yeah. How do we exploit the marketplace?
Yes. I know that will peg your yuck meter.
Yep.
So in that regard, I think it sounds like you continue in the process that you're in regards to saying, okay, Lord, like I'm going to start exploring this. I'm going to continue to hold it in front of you and say, Lord, is this you? I want you to continue to affirm this. And then I'm also going to check in with my yuck meter from time to time and say, is this getting activated or is this not getting activated? And how are my senses here in this space? And so especially like the idea of you not going and seeking it, there's a difference between the heart of, I want to try to make this or force this into a space where it's generating money or power or notoriety or whatever it might be, versus, Lord, I'm looking for creative options on how to get people access to this conversation. Is this one of them that you are placing in my path? I think those are two very different spaces.
And the other thing I was reminded of this morning was when I went down this publishing road, I've told this story a few times on the podcast, but it's not been for a while.
Yeah.
But when I kind of left the system of things and was looking for other ways, and I was looking for a plan for how I would publish books from now on. You know, am I going to self-publish? Am I going to go to a publishing company? Am I work through an agent? Am I going? And I had all this before God and praying and praying and praying for months to absolute silence. And then one day I'm on a phone call with someone who'd called me for some publishing advice, a young lady out from the East Coast. And she was asking me for some publishing advice. And as we're getting ready to hang up the phone call, I hear the Holy Spirit in my heart going, ask her, ask her, ask her. Ask her. She's asking. She doesn't know anything about. Ask her. Ask her. Ask her. Oh God, I can't believe I'm going to do this. She knows nothing about the publishing industry, which is why she's calling me.
Yeah.
And I said, by the way, let me ask you this, Stephanie. So I ran some stuff. I just ran that little story by her.
Yeah.
I've been trying for 4 months trying to figure out. I want an answer from God about what I should do. And she goes, this is what she says. This is almost word for word, Jim. Well, Wayne, It seems to me you're asking God how he wants to publish every book you ever write for the rest of your life, when all God wants to tell you is how to do the next one. And that was so clear. I mean, it was 4 months of praying, begging, looking for a plan instead of direction.
Yep.
And so now I'm right back there with this. No, I've never done this before. I had, right when the shack, Hachette took over, He Loves Me, because we brokered that in with the Shack, they got a publicist for me. And all she wanted to do was create a celebrity around me. And I was trying to get her to advance an idea about the love of God. And she said, I don't know how to do that. This is all about taking the author and making them a big deal.
Yeah.
I'm going, that's not what I want to do. So I've not even been open to that until the letter 2 weeks ago that was from an imposter that led me to someone who really does this, who says she will try to work with that same reality and is excited about doing it. So, and now I'm going, okay, here we are again. No plan would have worked for this.
Yep.
It's just catching the wind. Is this where the wind's leading? And like you said, we're going to down this for a little while, I think. And if the yuck meter pecks, just back out of it.
And that's, I think that's the other piece too, is I have personally navigated this with you, and I've watched you do it multiple times, where you explored opportunities, or you've explored deals, or explored potential open doors that are in front of you. And at least from my experience, you have said yes to preserving and maintaining and protecting the relationship over what's the bottom line of this. And even to the point of your own detriment at times. And so in my mind, like I think another just good checks and balances in this is, I think you're going to pursue it and see, like, is there a good relationship here that has the capacity to put this message out in the world? And I think you'll be able to sort that out as you continue to grow in the relationship with this potential partner in this endeavor.
We'll soon find out, that's for sure. I do have a group of people around me who pray about all things Livestream, and we've been having it before them for the last week. I ran the imposter thing through them. They were all going, yeah, that sounds really good. I'm going, I'm not done vetting yet. And when I got done vetting, I'm going, glad we didn't go down that road, because I don't think we ever heard from the person again, because she couldn't have done it in this other person's name. And this other person's a legit publicist. So anyway.
Interesting.
So we'll see where that goes. I'm Wayne Jacobson.
And I'm Kyle Rice.
And this is The God Journey. You've got a best thing this week?
I do. So it's actually from class today. I had multiple guest speakers lined up to come and speak in class today, and two of them backed out. And so I contacted a friend of mine in the emergency medical service world and said, hey, would you be willing to come in and speak? And they said, well, no, I'm not available. However, my supervisor might be. So let me reach out to him. And so he ended up being available. His wife joined him and they came in and they spoke in class today. It was amazing. But one of the things that I really appreciated that he said was, and I have not heard this come out of very many medical professionals' mouths, but that it is the medical world's ethical responsibility to evaluate the spirit of a person in the wholehearted treatment of their care. And
that'd ring all your bells.
Oh, it was so, like, I was like, okay, like, I was like, that just, I was like, okay, what? And so he continued on and made the comment about how in history, like throughout time, especially in more of our modern medical age, the standard for what medical success or failure look like is, are their organs functioning? Are they physically still alive? And yet he talked about the ability to be able to provide care to someone in a holistic way, in which their emotions, their psychological, their physical, and their spiritual are being well cared for. And if we need to change the measure of success in the medical community to be able to consider the holistic care of the person and what is the best quality of care for that person, and really genuinely challenge the idea of is just keeping them physically functioning actually holistic care? Is that a violation of my Hippocratic Oath, or is that a fulfillment of my Hippocratic Oath? And it was a phenomenal conversation that just spoke. Yeah, it was incredible.
Right up to your alley, sure. And yes. how much the psychological, spiritual well-being of a person affects the physical.
Absolutely. Yeah. And you can't separate those.
Or the healing process, you bet.
Correct.
That'd be a pretty good direction for medicine to take, unless you got some weird crystal churning doctor who's trying to do something to you.
Yeah. So that was the best thing I heard this week. What about you?
This is, an article called The Questions Couples Slowly Stop Asking and Why They Matter. Yeah, it's from Psychology's magazine. Never heard of it before. Came up on my Apple feed. This one line from it, though, I thought was brilliant. Curiosity is about understanding. Fixing is about control. Mm. Whether you're talking about Bible study or a couple or whatever, I love that. My life has so much, and I think when you get more relationally healthy with God's light and life inside of you, I have found myself naturally more curious about people and about things. And that always nurtures relationships. It's not, you hear something, oh, that's a little off. I need to fix that. So, you know, particularly if I'm trying to get them to Christ. And I was talking to a friend yesterday who's got we both have a mutual friend who's got a serious battle of cancer going on at the moment. Yeah. And he was trying to get in there and work the gospel in there. And the guy was trying to tell him to back off. And I was like, it's interesting. If you're curious and explore, and you might get to a better conversation, even about Jesus, than there's a problem here and I'm trying to fix it before I get thrown out of the hospital room or whatever. Does that make sense?
Yeah. Oh, absolutely.
I love this. And I know what Sarah's journey has been over the last 4 years, which we're coming up on the anniversary of that next week.
Yeah.
The nature of her journey last week has led to a whole new curiosity from both of us to the other about what's going on. And what were they thinking back then when that happened? And being able to explore, and that really adds to the health of a relationship, curiosity.
That's one of the, for me anyway, that's one of the predominant indicators that a relationship is in trouble, is if the two are not curious about one another anymore.
Yeah.
If it's moved into methodology, or if it's just moved into function, or if it's moved into convenience, or whatever that might be.
Or just survival. Just trying to get here and that. We're never sitting down curious about what's going on with the other person.
Yep. And curiosity morphs. I mean, I was actually, Jess and I were talking about this just a couple of nights ago. It would have been last Friday on our date night. But we were talking about curiosity, and it was kind of a mildly morbid conversation because we were talking about a situation where there was an individual that we were aware of that was navigating an affair. And so we launched into the conversation about what leads to an affair. Like, what are some of the things that would lead a person to want to do that to somebody that they genuinely care about? And one of the big things that we talked about was how curiosity leaves, and you're not continuing to explore and discover in the person that you are romantically and committed to one another. And so as I was kind of exploring that, we were talking about that a little more, and I was thinking about it, and I was like, well, I don't ask the same questions that I ask you when we were on our first date, because I know the answers to those questions. But it's like, am I still curious about what is it that's going on in your heart now? Like, what is it? What are some of the things that are going on in your future? What are some of the pressing things that are going on in your life? What are things about you that I don't know from your past or from your journey that you would love to share now? I mean, all of those different complexities of curiosity morphing and growing versus allowing it to go stagnant, allowing it to go into more survival, or just roommates that are coexisting alongside of one another, you know, those different pieces of the existence. It's very intriguing. It's in a very intriguing space.
And it takes a little bit of work to stay curious.
Yes.
Because the default is, after 51 years of marriage nearly, what is it I don't know about Sarah? But my goodness, there are so many things I'm learning and that I didn't know about Sarah that I thought I knew. And levels of curiosity, even when a new relationship is just beginning, not a romantic one, just a, something that may be more of a community kind of relationship.
Yeah.
Curiosity about them and what's going on in their heart, why they're doing what they're doing, with not a hostile interrogation, just the gentle curiosity of friendship. Yeah. And that's what builds a friendship better than anything, I think.
Yeah, I would agree with you. I mean, I think, but the challenge is that I think that's why there's so little, or I think that, let me rephrase that. I think that genuine community connections are becoming more rare is because I think partially we've lost the passion of curiosity. We've lost intrigue as a society because we're seeking it in other things, or we're just so self-focused that there isn't that awe of discovering something new about a different person's world or their life or their worldview or their perspective or experiences that they've had. I think when you lose that, it's hard to move into that genuine connection because you're not curious. You're evaluating, is this person going to serve a need in my life or not? And if they're not, and I can't get anything from them, then why should I invest my time here?
Or I have a need to talk. I want to tell them about me.
Yes.
This is a really good line between, do I live with an other's awareness and curiosity and wanting relationships to be explored and to grow? Or am I just looking for somebody to hear my stuff?
Yeah.
Because I want to share stuff. And I ran into that recently with somebody that just couldn't stop talking. And they realized it. And they kept saying, I know I'm dominating this thing. It's okay. I mean, it's fine. But I think when people get nervous, particularly people that haven't been listened to a lot, and when somebody opens the door, I've done that with friends where we're talking to somebody and somebody dominates the whole conversation and later will say, you know, that person has not had anyone listen to them for a very long time. And when that door opened, my goodness, you couldn't hammer that thing shut. So that's a way to love. Okay. They need to get this out because they haven't had the opportunity for it.
Well, and that's a lot of clients, especially when I was working in professional mental health in the past, that was one of the initial first precursors that I would tell them is, look, chances are the first couple of sessions of us working together is going to be you dumping all the puzzle pieces out. You don't need to apologize to me for that. You don't need to explain that to me. You don't need to give me a bunch of context. Just do it. And then we'll sort it out later. But usually there was some major just dump because often they had not felt heard or seen for a very long time, if ever. And so to have a space where they can do that safely and know that the person is genuinely interested in exploring that with them is incredibly important.
Yeah, for sure. Hey, have you ever had much of a chance to think about the parable of the talents of late?
Not lately, no.
Well, I got into this in a conversation on Monday with someone and he's asking questions about it. So we were exploring it. Okay. And it brought me back to some old, I think it's a parable I haven't done much with because it's kind of confusing.
Yeah.
It seems to not have all the kingdom priorities about it. Here's a guy who passes out money, talents, 5 bags of gold, depending on what translation you read, and gives money to these three people and then goes away and then comes back and wants to see what they've done with the money he gave them. And one guy, you know, took 5 and got 5 more, investing it, doing whatever. And that guy, 2, got 2 more. The one guy with 1 was so afraid of the master, didn't want to lose it. So he just buried it. And when he came back, he said, hey, here, I've got it. Here it is.
Yeah.
And then the parable goes in really weird directions from there. The guy who has 5 gets that guy's who lost his. Jesus takes it away, or the king or whoever. And so we were talking about this. The guy said, what do you make of this parable?
Uh-huh.
And I had heard of a phrase a while back that I just came up. Well, and I had read this in a manuscript. It's not a published book, but was saying that the parable of the talents is about love. Love is the treasure. And I'm going, okay, that would really change it. This parable is really weird if it's, you know what, you're a really good person, so I'm going to give you 5. And this guy's not so great. I'm going to give him 2. And I'm going to give this one 1. And when you look at the economics of it, if this is an economic way the kingdom works, it kind of turns my stomach. But then when you think of the treasure he gives is love. And when he comes back, what have you done with the love I've given you? That now this makes it a little more compelling.
Interesting.
Because one of the questions I've had asked when I've covered it in various sessions, somebody will ask me, say, what about the guy with the one who was so afraid? What if he'd invested it and lost it all? What would the master have done then?
Mm-hmm.
And that's an intriguing question, because that would account for hiding it. And yet, if what's true is you can't invest this commodity and not have it grow. That seems to be the bias of the king. You can't do that because it grows. And what does that? It's not certainly not finances. It's not necessarily our talents. Like I heard it growing up. It's, you know, your ability to speak scripture, your ability to sing, your ability to use your abilities for God. That was all about the machine exploiting you. I heard that.
Oh yeah.
But what do you think of this? If it was really about love, and then God distributes that by capability, is what New International says. But what if that's capacity? That someone has a larger capacity for love than someone who's maybe fairly new to the journey. The capacity isn't large yet. And so Jesus imparts his love based on our capacity to receive it. And if our capacity isn't there, then he's going to be growing the capacity rather than, I'm going to give you more that will swallow you up in what you're not ready for yet. That would make more sense to me.
Interesting. Okay. So I have seen this through a few different lenses. I've heard it taught through a few different lenses. We'll just put it that way. The first one is a really fun combination of shame and fear, because it's like, well, there's the one person that's got the five talents, and you know, he goes out and he doubles it, and just is doing great. And then there's the one person, and he doesn't do anything with it and wastes it. And so you better not be that person, right? Like that was one of the major messages that I got.
Of course,
don't you dare miss the opportunities that God gives you. And you better be always vigilant for anything that God might have for you, the plans that he might have for you. Because if you don't, then you might miss out on them.
And you usually get that sermon in September when we need more ministry volunteers for the children's department.
Yes. Yeah. Or December, when we're closing in on the end of tax season and we need those end of the year write-offs.
There you go. Yes.
So that's one vein that I've heard it in. Then I've heard like the don't waste, like God gives you these talents, and then if you waste it, then he's going to take them away from you, and then you're going to be living a life of depravity for the rest of your life. So there was that fun one. Then I heard one that was really intriguing that might play into this a little bit. It was talking about how the people who received the talents, what they did with it reflected their belief about the character and the heart of the person who gave them the talents. And that was intriguing to me because it talked about how what they believed about how the father would respond. So how the owner would respond when he came back. He made the argument that the one with the five talents, he made five talents. Like, you know, he doubled his money. Or doubled his talents, or however you want to say that, but he doubled what was given to him.
Mm-hmm.
But he did so without the fear of losing it. So he was able to double it because he went out, he invested it, he tried, he did things, and as a result, it sowed more in the world, and he got back and he was able to say, yeah, here, owner, this is what I did with it. I tried some different things, and this is what I came back with.
Mm-hmm.
And same for the second person, but the third person, he talks about how he believed and feared the character and the nature of the king or the owner, the person who gave him the talent. And so out of that fear of what he would do to him, he wanted to at least make sure that he had something to give back. So that was a very intriguing perspective on it. But it always gets wonky to me because then the feedback is, well, at least you could put it in the bank and got some interest from it. It's like, wait, what? Like, what? Okay.
Well, I think that was the way in the parable where he's able to tell the man who's so afraid he buried it.
Yeah.
He said, look, if you really wanted to do something responsible, you could have at least gotten this modicum of interest, which is
correct.
Really pointing out that this guy was not ready to handle what was given to him, how paralyzing fear is. It make irrational decisions out of fear.
Yeah.
And all of this is just an economic or manipulation tool for when you need volunteers or more money in the congregation. For this to really be about love, I'm going to give you my love in the capacity that you can receive it.
Yeah.
And if you hoard it or bury it, it's going to die on you. That it's not really in the parable. Yeah. It's the master that's going to do the consequences. But I wonder in the whole context of love, if isn't just your actions lead to certain consequences. Mm. And so if the first person is able to take the capacity for what God gives and looks to share it in the world, the thought I had this morning that I was thinking about this on my walk with Mandy, because Sarah didn't go with us today either. I was thinking, well, we have to see that love is not a commodity that God gives that's measured in by how much I need. I may have a little bit left over. Money, economics, all those things you can think that way. Time, all that is a limited commodity that you have to somehow negotiate.
Yep.
But love is the only thing that you can give, and it grows greater. It's not a commodity to possess or a commodity to measure out. If you learn to love freely, love is a flow you get into. And and if you're not very far in the flow, that's okay. You got to start somewhere. Maybe you'll get further. That's the more who has, more will be given. He says that too in there. And I've come to see this parable in such a different way now, that this is our invitation to jump in the flow of love at whatever level you're ready. And then as you learn to let go of things that God, and let this love become not just a something to possess, but a flow to be engaged with. I become a distribution of the love that God pours into my life by loving others around me, by imparting life to them. And if I do that, they grow, I grow. There's that multiplying thing that love cannot go into the world and not bear fruit. Mm. It may not be the fruit we want. It may not be, I'm going to love this person. They'll come to Christ. They'll do whatever. It's not love for an expectation we have, but the pouring out of love in the world, love flowing through me to the situations in my life, opens the door for more love to flow through me to the situations in my life. And the more I experience that love, the less I have any inclination to hold it back in. Because it's in the sharing of love. And I'm going to use a different word here, which we use in Just Love. It's this, love and life are very similar. Love is the sharing of life. So God loves us. It's not just, I love you and I'm going to sit here and watch you. Love means God imparts. God shares life with us. And when we love other people, we're looking to impart and share life with them. Whether that's resources they need, whether that's just friendship, whether that's whatever, it's looking to be available to impart life. And that flow of life, I think, is so compelling and makes so much sense. In this parable that's between the five virgins that had too much oil or had enough oil and five virgins who didn't, and then between the sheep and the goats later, which, again, if that's not a flow of love there either, then it invites you right back to performance Christianity.
Yeah.
But if you love well in the world, you're not saying, oh, I knew I was feeding Jesus there with that hungry person. I didn't know. I just knew they were hungry and I had food and I gave it to them.
Yeah.
And that's what Jesus commands. So I think this whole chapter of Matthew, Jesus is telling these three parables, are all about ways to experience a love and a fullness of love that will just carry you beyond your own needs and make you an influence in the world.
As you've been talking, one of the things that I think, and let's see how this lands for you, but one of the things that I'm intrigued about too, is it also takes these parables and brings them more into alignment with some of the other parables that he shared. Like, for example, don't hide your light underneath a bushel, be the city on the hill. Don't let the salt of your life, get muddled down. Like, it's like, okay, if all of those are pointing towards how to live out and be a doorway or a conduit of God's love into the world, it's like, oh, well, yeah, then that's right in alignment with a continuous message of how to be abundant life in the world and how to live that out and how to share that with others. Like, oh, that makes sense. Like that, I don't know. There feels like more of a continuity of the message versus there's these three parables and then how do these parables fit? And you know, even the sower, the parable of the seeds, right? Again, that's I've never thought about the parable of the seeds being sown through the perspective of capacity. What is the capacity of the individual? It's not that God stopped sowing seeds. It's what is the capacity of that person's life to be able to take the seeds and to allow things to grow? Because sometimes we don't have the capacity yet, and the cares of the concerns of the world choke out what God's trying to grow in our life. And so he continues to help us become good soil, to be able to have capacity, to be able to be that doorway, to increase our ability to do that, and then plants more seeds and sees what grows out of that. Like, I don't know. That's very intriguing to me.
Yeah, it is. And it's allowing us to be free to live in the capacity we have.
Yeah.
Performance-based Christianity is you're always chasing an unattainable ideal and you Correct. Always fall short. So there's no yep. appreciation between, I might aspire to something greater over here than I could possibly do right now because I don't have the capacity to respond to Jesus in that way.
Yeah.
But where I do have the capacity, if I'm responding in what little bit I have, particularly yeah. someone that's been, you know, traumatized or gone through very difficult things in their life, they may not have much capacity to like, okay, I need to be sharing everything with other people and be aware of community and be curious. And I need to be doing all this stuff. If that's what the application of this podcast is, that will kill them. Be able to enjoy what capacity you have and love in the ways that you can love. And impart life. And when it's beyond you, stop and don't kill yeah. yourself, because you don't have an exacting taskmaster. What the third guy yeah. really feared most, this God's going to kill me if I don't get it right. That's where we lose our ability to share love, because now it's not love. It's somehow I've got to do something to keep God at bay or to keep him from hurting me or killing me or taking my stuff. So I'm not doing this for the love of the other person. I'm doing this for the love of myself.
Yeah.
To protect me.
And self-protection or self-promotion.
Yes.
Which is fear-based identity. Yeah.
Yes.
Yeah.
And one of the other parables I thought of when you were running through that list of them was the pearl of great price, which is just treasure. Yeah. And the treasure in scripture is never monetary.
Yep.
It's never about lands. It's never about all that. It's not about how talented or gifted you are. The treasure in scripture is the light and life and wisdom of God. That's the treasure.
Well, then also, right? Like if we're talking about capacity for love, right? And capacity for life, for me, again, another parable that popped into my mind was the idea of faith like a mustard seed. So if the capacity that I need is the size of a mustard seed to tell the mountain, go and throw yourself in the ocean, that's, now all of a sudden incredibly encouraging.
Yeah.
Because it's like, oh, God's the one who is growing and expanding my capacity. And if the capacity that I need to tell that mountain to go throw itself in the ocean is the size of a mustard seed, sweet. Like, okay, Lord, like that's mind blowing. Versus, wow, my faith must be so small because I haven't told that mountain to throw itself in the sea and I haven't seen it happen. Like I must have a microscopic form of faith or a microscopic expression of God's love in comparison to a mustard seed.
This has really got my mind reeling with the joy of just how do I lean into that space of love, experience it from Father, letting that love connect enough with me that then I can look for ways. Even when God shows me something, I'm the next day looking for, is there any place I can drop this into a conversation that will be a blessing to them? Not to show how wise I am or say, hey, God shared this with me the other day, but just give that wisdom on to someone else. And actually shared this with the publicist that I was talking to. I actually shared the Baruch thing with her. I said, you know, I really had to ask God whether you were Egypt or whether you were Baruch. And I spent a long walk today sorting through that. And she wrote me back and she said, I had to Google who Baruch was because I had no idea who he was. And she said, but I tell you, I'm going to tell you right now, I'm going to steal this in my proposals to new clients. I just want to be the Baruch in your life. And I, wow, already gave it. And so she said, I'm going to steal it. And I wrote her back and said, can't steal it. It was a gift to me. It's a gift to you.
Oh, that's awesome.
It's a powerful way to live. And I don't think I'll ever see this, read this parable again. and not think about the only thing that can be given to us that we can give away and never lose is love.
Yeah.
Because you can make a really brilliant investment in something that just all goes south. And that's
absolutely
financially, it's not your fault. I mean, it happens to some of the best business minded people in the world. So it can't be that.
Yeah.
I have the security to say, if you've given me love, I'm going to look for a way to share it today inside my capacity.
Mm.
And if I do that, that capacity will grow. It's also when you talk about the parable of the sower, if it really is about capacity, if the seed's not going to grow on rock, no matter how many seeds you put there, how do I help people? How do I encourage and I don't mean a seminar on capacity. I just mean, how do I encourage that life to open their eyes wider to how God is near them, inviting them in and letting God be magnified in my life? I know when I was early on this journey, Kevin Smith, a friend from Australia, was a guy who did that for me. When I hung out with Kevin, and I did for a couple of weeks the first time, and then once a year over the next 5-6 years, we crossed paths somewhere in the world. Sometimes he was in America. Once we were doing a class together in Singapore, we were just in different places and connected. And every time I was with him, my capacity for trust grew because watching him opened up my heart for love in a way that I had not learned yet to trust that God loved me enough to get me through this next thing in my life. Somehow I had to figure it out on my own and do it in a way that God would be honored and all that stuff. And I tell you that he's since now with Jesus knowing stuff I wish I knew, but man, to think that we can do that for other people is just awesome to me.
Well, it makes me like, honestly, it makes me even think about the capacity of water, right? Because he talked about how Jesus says, I'm the living water, right? So if we're referencing back to the imagery of the sower and the rock, right? So then now he's having this conversation with a woman at the well. She's had multiple relationships where she's been seeking life and she's been trying to find joy in those. And so I can kind of imagine her heart is more like a rock. It's kind of hard. It's pretty calloused from these multiple experiences that she has been navigating.
Sure.
And yet, what better thing to penetrate rock than water? It's the only thing that can find its way through, right? Like it can find any little crack, any kind of pore, and it can start to break away that rock and spread it and create pathways and create openness and allow other things to grow up through it. And it just, so what better way to be the living water that's pouring over and moving over the rock? I mean, I don't know.
And here's the flow again. Not only is he the living water, but out of your innermost being will flow rivers of living water.
Of living water, yes.
Which isn't for you. I have it from him. The rivers of living water coming out of me are to nourish and to expand capacity and to bless people I engage.
And we start out as a little creek, or as they say back east, a crick, and then it gets bigger and bigger.
Thank you for traveling with us today on The God Journey. You can join this conversation by visiting thegodjourney.com.